Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Lovumentary, episode number 3. I'm Nate Bagley, your host, and today we have a treat. We are going to hear from my two new friends, Torben and Marissa. They are a pair of documentary filmmakers. They love jazz music, and they are really good at answering great questions that are asked to them on podcasts about their marriage. They've been married for about 7 years and have learned quite a bit of knowledge. They learn knowledge, and they were gracious enough to share their knowledge that they have learned with me in my ear holes. And it went into my brain area, and now I know it. I'm really excited for you to listen to this podcast because it's fantastic, and I'm going to stop stalling and just let you listen to it. If you'd like to check out some of Torben and Marissa's work, I've linked to it on the blog at loveumentary.com. They have a really cool documentary series called the Lost and Found series that you can check out there. And that is all. Enjoy the episode.
You should always be nervous when you're going to get recorded.
Yeah, exactly. Especially turning the tables, you know? Like when you're used to recording people and then you're being recorded.
At least we're not being filmed.
The worst thing ever was when we started, when I first started this, I listened to the first episode and listened to my own voice and I was like, oh gosh.
Yeah.
I can't send this out to everybody. They're going to, it's embarrassing.
Is that my voice?
The hardest thing about, and you guys can relate to this both doing film, the hardest thing about doing something like this is having a project that means so much to you that you worked so hard on and then giving it to everybody else and not knowing how it's going to be received.
Yeah. Because
people could either love it or they could hate it. And if they hate it, it's like they hate you sometimes.
Yeah. I think part of the problem is that for you, it's always a process. And for most people, you have to come to terms with the fact that it's going to be a product for them.
Yeah.
And so you're going through this whole process and you have an eye towards all that and like all of the ups and downs, how bad it was, how much better it became through editing, how you changed.
You were making it.
Oh, yeah.
And then you watch people just like consume it. And like the first time we played Sonosifer in San Jose, I think like, it's a film festival. People sometimes they do like go in and out because they're going to different screenings. But like 30 people walked out the first time we screened it in California. It was just
brutal.
It's hard.
Yeah, but I also feel like I still feel bothered by that stuff, but I found myself out of necessity growing thicker skin only because otherwise, like, it's really hard to keep working.
Yeah.
That's how you get over it is you make something else.
Yeah, you move on. You have to, like,
so not all of your ego is tied into one project.
Right.
You know, you just have to spread it out and hopefully. Yeah, you just have to keep going. Otherwise, you will crumble into oblivion.
So, do you guys want to introduce yourselves to the internet?
You want to go first?
No.
You want me to go first? Sure. Torben Bernhard.
Hey, Torben.
Hey.
We're not alive, are we?
Oh, we're live.
Oh, okay. Well. So I'm Marissa Bernhard.
Nice to meet you guys. You're the first couple, I think I just told you this, that I've interviewed that I've never met. So why don't you guys tell me how you met? I'd love to hear that story.
We knew this question was coming.
It always does.
Please.
Me?
Oh, yeah, please. Gosh.
We met in a hot tub.
Oh, ooh.
And what's always this is actually a weird question for, like, we always feel a little bit weird about this question because we feel like, or at least I feel like, and I think Torben feels like this too, that people always expect how you met, like, the how you met story to be extremely indicative of, you know, like metaphorically connected to what your entire relationship is like.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I it just doesn't seem very adequate to me. So I always feel a little weird about telling, you know, like, yeah, we met in a hot, you know, like, we had mutual friends and we just were hanging out and we met while we were in hot tub. Or I guess I was. He was going on a date with someone else.
That's true.
But then later that night he came home and we talked, we like, what happened? Oh, we started talking about jazz and then film, and then 5 hours passed and...
See, there's the story.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, see, that's the problem, is like trying to... I think sometimes when someone asks you how you met, you take it literally and then feel like you need to tell the story chronologically. And I think where we really met in terms of like what ended up sparking interest in having a relationship was later that night. I came back and she mentioned that she was going to a jazz festival in Park City, and all of a sudden I was like perked up, ooh, like someone who actually like listens to jazz. And then we started talking about movies, and before we knew it, we've been talking for 5 hours, 6 hours, and you know, you just kind of have these connections with people. And I don't know, like, there's times when you meet people, and I think this is true in relationships, and I also think it's true in friendships, where you meet somebody and you feel like you're catching up, like, even if you just met them for the first time, like, there's so much to talk about and there's so much to learn that you feel like it has that kind of immediacy of reconnecting with somebody and then wanting to feel the intimacy again, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you guys met, you had that long conversation, and was it just like, kind of, not so much love at first sight, but was it the rest history, or did you guys date for a long time, or like, how did the rest of your, I guess, what was the process between that first night when you met and had your conversation to when you kind of knew that you were supposed to spend the rest of your lives together? And that's probably, it could be a long story, but yeah. Give me the highlights.
It's actually, I mean, I guess it depends how you look at it, whether it's long or short, but I think, and this, I even hate to say this because I'm at risk of sounding just stereotypical, but after about a week of, well, we didn't start dating right away. There was like a month or so until we saw each other again and like actually planned on spending time together separate from our group of friends. But a week after we really started seeing each other, I remember Torben said, if I had the choice right now between between marrying you today and never seeing you again, it wouldn't be a question. Like, I would marry you right now. And so
those are bold words.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. It sounds sappy, but I'm a passionate guy, and like I felt that way, you know. And I'm glad I said that, because like in some ways, like when you feel so good about somebody, or like so excited about the prospect of a relationship, you almost, I mean, at least for me, I almost like feared the prospect of losing it so much that I wanted to be that bold, right? Just to introduce the possibility of, I don't know, creating conditions for it to not go away.
Right. So what, how long did you guys date before you got married?
Only a year.
Yeah, about a year.
That's a good time, especially in Utah.
Yeah, about a year.
Cool. That's really cool, though, that early on you kind of had that honest, the openness to be able to talk to each other about that kind of thing. I think a lot of people expect to play the game and, you know, not be completely open and honest about their feelings for the other person, whether it be out of fear or...
I'm not saying it wasn't scary. It was terrifying.
But you did it, which is the funny, which is the cool thing. You just don't... It's rare to find that. Do you think you have carried that sense of honesty over and kind of transparency into your relationship now? Does that make sense?
Yeah. It does make sense. It just... I mean, generally, yes, but I think that that fluctuated a lot, especially at first. So I think when we met, we had this just immediate connection where we just, you know, like, where, like, some people you meet and you just have a instantaneously, they feel like home to you, I guess. And I feel like we had that pretty immediately. But then that was a really scary feeling, I guess, especially because we were so young,
mm-hmm.
To experience something that felt that significant. Like when you're 20 years old, I don't know, for me, that is a really young age to be making decisions that are going to this significantly impact your entire life. So that was a very scary thing for me. So I think at first, and I think because we connected so much and because we both felt like, okay, this, even though it is kind of scary, like we know that we just intuitively know that we're supposed to be together. We were both kind of fatalistic about our relationship. Like, oh no, if I have any negative feelings, if I have any fears, if I have any doubts, if I have any, worries about, you know, or concerns about our relationship, then I'm, you know, going to jinx it, or, you know, something, I'm going to screw this up. And so I think both of us were like that, and we were kind of scared to talk to each other about it, especially while we were engaged for that year. So it was like amazing connection. We're meant to be together. And then a few months later, we got engaged, and then it was like that was a really hard time in our relationship, actually.
Right. I mean, I think that's somewhat common. I think like having an amazing connection comes in tandem with the fear of losing it.
Yeah.
And so that makes you behave in a lot of odd ways.
How did you guys overcome that?
Started being honest with each other. I think we, at first, we were both experiencing it separately, and we thought that we were the only ones experiencing it, and almost as if we were to say it out loud, then it would represent the ruin of our relationship. And at some point, that became the very thing that empowered the relationship, was talking about it. And talking about the good and the bad, and
well, and as soon as I can't remember like exactly how that conversation played out, but I remember the feeling like, oh, we were both feeling that way. And then as soon as we realized that, it was just immediately like a weight had been lifted off.
So much relief.
It was just like we were both being ridiculous.
Well, because otherwise you're just like you're just dealing with the shadows, and a lot of times the idea mm-hmm. of the thing is much less scary than the thing itself. And when more you finally scary. When you finally bring it, yeah, a lot more scary. When you finally bring it to light, it's something that can totally be managed. And
right.
I mean, so to answer your original question, I would say that in our best moments today in our relationship, we are like that. There's that same kind of honesty and that same kind of transparency. And I think it's those moments that are the... I think those moments are the real thing that maintain our relationship between everything else. Because, I mean, you get busy with work and you're tired and there's a number of other things going on. But when we're at our best, we retain that honesty and that transparency, and it always brings us back to the same page. And then we're, I think, able to move forward together.
So a lot of people tell me... And I think as a single person, we hear this a lot, that relationships require a lot of work and that they're not always perfect. And obviously that's the case for any relationship, even relationships where you have that awesome chemistry with somebody. So what do you guys think that people mean when they say a relationship requires a lot of work, a good relationship?
I think that there's some things in the world that you can reach a certain level at, and you can arrive, and then that stays there. Like you figure out how to, I don't know, can't think of an example, build a table, and you've built the table, and there it is. It's amazing, and it will be that way forever unless you do something horrible to it. But relationships are not like that. They just require maintenance, and you can't just get to a certain level and then expect it to stay like that if you're not continuously checking up on it.
Yeah, I mean, relationships are dynamic, and as such, you're always in the process of being in one. It's not like a product that gets made static through the, you know, that you have this process and then you end up with a table or whatever it is. I think, I think the most valuable things in my life are parts of a larger process, and there's always maintenance. There's always growth. There's always development. There's always setbacks. You know, it's never this clean, simple, linear track upward. And I like that. I wouldn't have it be any other way, really. Or at least I can't even imagine what it would be like for it to be different than that.
What do you think makes that so satisfying then?
I think that we tie what we experience in the process to a narrative, and we take that narrative with us forward, you know, and it constantly informs everything that we do.
You guys both have an interest. You're both in film, and obviously you both like jazz music. Do you feel like that's the part, having a lot of common interests? I don't know if you have a lot more common interests. I'm assuming you probably do.
Mm-hmm. We do.
Did that bring you guys together a lot, or was it kind of a non-factor?
I mean, I think, for both of us, our interests, especially our broadly interpreted artistic interests, were very important to both of us. And so for us, that was a big deal.
Right.
So I think that there's a lot of couples who maybe they don't like the same movies and music or literature, philosophies, whatever, and that's completely fine. And in some ways, they can fill in each other's gaps and whatnot. But for us, a lot of the things that we enjoy doing together are watching films. like the first year we got married, I think almost every day we were watching a different foreign film. We were both into film, but Torben actually hadn't watched that many foreign films when we got married. So it was like every day we were watching a foreign film. And like, I think both of us look back at that time like a really fondly.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think that it depends. I think it depends on what you need as a person. I don't like Marissa was saying, I don't think everyone has the same needs, but for me, I certainly need that kind of reciprocity. I get energy from friendships and relationships that motivate ideas, that inspire me, that make me want to be better. And I feel like my relationship does all that for me. I mean, it's really important. It was really important to me before I met Marissa that the person who I was going to marry would be someone that I could talk to, that wouldn't make me feel heady and abstract and muddled, which I am often, but like someone that would make me feel like what I was thinking was important and that it was meaningful. And then that would explore things with me. And so I view like watching films and listening to music, it's all part of a bigger exploration. It's not just a hobby. It's about how to explore and maneuver through life. I mean, I don't know that it's that dissimilar to you doing this podcast. I mean, it's a way of exploring topics and learning about things. And when you're doing that with someone else, it's not just, oh yeah, we like to do this hobby together. I mean, that's part of it. Part of it is just entertainment, but it's also that we grow as we watch and as we think about it, as we talk about it. And so it becomes something that's larger, like it becomes this like kind of shared experience that we're able to have together.
I was talking to a friend today, and she and I have done a lot of projects together, and she's just recently started dating this guy, and things are going really well for her. And she said, Nate, what's more important, do you think, love or work? And what she meant wasn't so much work like a job, but you're something that you're passionate about, you know, like, I mean, before I knew that you were, that Marissa was interested in film, I thought I was wondering in my head, like, oh, I wonder what it's like for Torben to, you know, be really into film and do these documentaries and how his wife supports him. And it's interesting to see that you guys do that together. But what do you guys think about that question? Do you think it's more important for somebody to be able to pursue their passions in life and do what makes them fulfilled? Or do you think it's more important to be in a loving relationship? Like, what if your relationship required you to sacrifice the thing that you're most passionate about in life? Which would you choose and why?
I choose my relationship. I thought a lot about that because my first documentary was about, you know, Alex Caldeiro called The Sonosopher. And Alex is somebody who, throughout his life, has been really, really invested in his work. And I know it's constantly been a challenge for him to try to balance those demands. And so as I was making this documentary and watching him with, you know, 40 years out from where I'm at, still trying to focus on his work and still trying to do his art, I started to ask myself, what would I choose if I had to make a decision? And I think I would choose my relationship because of the benefits that I get from my relationship are pretty unique. Like, when I was thinking about this podcast before you came over, I was thinking about, like, what I think about the concept of true love, for example, or, like, what love looks like. And what love looks like to me is no pretense, like, not having to pretend. And I always feel like when I'm out in the world, I don't feel like I'm pretending, but I always feel like I have walls up and I'm trying to maneuver and I'm trying to craft situations. And then I come home and there's a kind of security and safety that is kind of unparalleled in anything else in my life. Luckily, I don't have to make that decision because we have the same interests. And so we get to work on stuff together and kind of balance that out. And so even when we're working on stuff, we usually get to work on it together. But I do think for me, it would be relationship.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I'm not exactly sure how I feel about that question because I don't really feel like can relate to it, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, On one hand, I feel like if you choose somebody who knows you, like who knows who you are at your core, they're going to understand what you need, and that entails what you're passionate about. And if they can't deal with those things, then that's them not dealing with you.
Right.
And I think sometimes that's hard to figure out what your passions really are, like what the, like, not just I'm passionate about this specific project, but finding out about the root of why that project's, it, like, what it is about that thing that you're passionate about.
Right. Why it resonates with you.
Yeah. And so maybe, you know, maybe I can't just, I don't know, go on some, like, several year long, you know, I don't know. I can't really think of an example.
Individual spiritual journey.
Yeah. Or whatever.
Into, like, monkhood.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, maybe that's not as available to me as an option as somebody in a relationship that requires upkeep more than every several years. But I feel like those same inclinations, you can find what is at the root of those inclinations and you can explore those things in other ways that are compatible with your relationship.
Right.
Yeah, I like her answer. I'll adopt that one too. That's better than mine.
No, it's good. It's a good answer. That was a really good answer. Because if somebody really does understand you, they're gonna understand what makes you tick, and they're gonna want you to have that.
Yeah. And that's how
at least
I feel.
That's the hope.
Yeah, and maybe that's not realistic in some cases, and maybe we're just exceptionally fortunate to have a lot of similar passions. But yeah, I just, That's how I feel about it. I just, it's hard for me to think about that as a, I don't know, to me it feels like a false dichotomy. Right. And that's just how I feel about it.
Way to call it like you see it. I respect that. So you guys have been married for how many years?
Almost seven.
What would you say is the most valuable lesson that you've learned in the last 7 years of marriage? It's kind of a really broad question, or maybe just touch on some of the things you've learned together.
I would say that the biggest lesson for us as a couple was defining what marriage looks like for us. When we first got married, we both had inherited certain ideas about what marriage looked like. What I was supposed to do, what she was supposed to do, different gender roles. I was out dutifully working like two jobs and going to school full time. Marissa felt like the pressure of keeping the house clean rested solely on her shoulders. And we had to throw that out because it wasn't working for us. It's not who we are.
We were really unhappy.
And we were unhappy trying to fulfill roles and trying to will them into being when that's not who we are. And so at a certain point, we did our own inventory and asked ourselves what we wanted. You know, it was a process. It wasn't like we got down one day and like just wrote everything on a piece of paper and figured it all out. But I think over the span of a few years, we started to kind of work out what we thought this thing should look like. And what most importantly,
was fair for us. And for other people, they work out what's fair for them completely differently. And that's fine, as long as both people feel like it really is fair, which is often not the case.
Right.
Well, it's not like we figured it out, like, okay, this is exactly what's going to look like. But we made an important decision on that day, and that is that we could define it. You know, and
for ourselves.
And so from there on out, like, however that's taking shape, it's taking shape in a lot of different ways through the years.
And it changes.
But we're the masters of that narrative for us.
Right.
And what makes sense for us. And so if we get pressures from other people to do certain things, like we still don't have children 7 years in, it's like we're kind of on the same page. And so it's not really that much pressure to me. I just kind of take it. I'm like, well, you know, that was what you guys did, and this is our relationship.
Right.
And so we try to assess what we want and what marriage looks, what we want our marriage to look like, and then we go for it.
Yeah. And for example, for a while, I was, because at first we had a very traditional gender roles separated. I felt no pressure to work, even though we have no children. It was like, it's an absurd thought to think about now to me, but I just, you know, all the pressure financially was on him. I felt like a failure if the house wasn't spectacularly clean, or if, you know, we didn't have meals, or I don't know. I just felt all this pressure to like about what being a wife entailed. And it wasn't until I became the primary breadwinner and while Torben was working on Sinosopher, predominantly with his time. And well, I guess you were going to school part time too. But it wasn't until that happened when we realized that we were actually okay like that, even though we were getting a lot of outside pressure to not be like that, and we felt a lot of judgment. But we realized that we, in our relationship and in our home, we were comfortable with how we were, and that we were happier in that, you know, in with that arrangement between ourselves. So that was, I mean, I guess it sounds silly, maybe.
No, not at all.
To a like modern mindset, but that was a serious hurdle for us, I think. And I think when we decided that we were going to define it for ourselves, I felt like our relationship jumped to a whole nother level.
I think we're all subject to hidden programming on one level or another. And at some point, hopefully you start to ask yourself those important questions about what things you've inherited and adopted and what things are genuinely part of you. And I always feel like I'll be happier if I can identify the things that are me and the things that I do want, and then I can withstand the judgments because I'm confident in my choice. And at the end of the day, it's like, well, that's our choice, and I'm confident and I don't feel insecure about it because it really is something that's an extension of me and how I feel.
Kind of a process to go through, to really recognize that you can live your life the way you want to live your life, and you don't have to live it up to the family expectations or the community expectations or just tradition. That's something that I've been learning over the last few years as a single person as well. It's interesting to kind of wake up and realize how much control you have over your life and that you don't have to live in a mold. So I don't know. I think it's really interesting that you guys experienced that together. And that was really interesting. Sorry, I feel so boring.
No, you're good.
if you guys could go back and like have a conversation, maybe like 10 minutes with your single self before you got married, what advice would you give yourself?
Ooh.
That's my secret way of saying, what advice would you give people like me?
I don't know if it's so much like because of the experiences that I've had in the relationship, but just observations for the years. I would say that I feel like people are rarely happy when they will things into being. Meaning, what I mean by that is that will something that is not into being, if it's not clicking and your relationship's not working, or if you meet somebody and just because you once again like feel those societal pressures and you're trying to make it something that it's not, I always feel like people are trying to force something to be something that it's inherently not. And I feel like people really benefit when they're patient and try to find the right person and someone that really does do those things for them, someone that does make them want to be a better person, someone that does inspire them. And I think those people do exist for us, and we deserve them.
If I was to go back and talk to myself, I would probably talk about some of the stuff that we just told you about, actually.
Oh, that's fair enough.
just because that, I mean, literally changed everything. and no one had really, it wasn't in my head well enough. So I don't know how to really, even though I didn't feel like I was a very traditional person as a single person, I had no idea how much societal expectations that I had inside my own mind. even my parents sometimes are surprised, even though they have very traditional roles, in their marriage, they're surprised sometimes about certain expectations that I put on myself. Like, oh, well, I can't do this because with that comes this whole, you know, package that I'm not ready for. And that's rarely the case. Like, you can pretty much always pick and choose, you know, a custom design, anything that you want. And like, so you can have any kind of job and you can pick the things that suit you and the things that don't. We're both media people, but we figure out how to, you know, upkeep a relationship and not starve to death. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's like just one example of a million things like that. Even though I considered myself somebody who is thoughtful and who thinks outside of the box. I didn't realize about myself that I adopted a lot of outside narratives that, and didn't even consider if they fit me individually. And so I think I would have benefited from that, like being pounded into my head.
Yeah. A lot of times the thing that makes us most unhappy is the vision that we have, the preconceived notion that we have of what life should be like, and that it's not that way. Mm-hmm. I think that once you come to grips, like you not lower your expectations, but kind of lower your expectations or get rid of those barriers, those molds, I think that we find ourselves being a lot happier with the situations we're presented with, said the host.
I think another thing I'll say real briefly too is that I get the sense from a lot of my single friends, or I've heard this a lot of times, that they think that marriage is going to inhibit their freedom. Mm-hmm. And I think what I would tell myself, I don't know that I believed that before, but if I'm giving advice to single people this broadly, I would say that that's been the reverse of my personal experience. And I can't speak for everybody, but for me, I grew so much once we married. I became a better student. When we first met, I wasn't really interested in trying to become a documentary filmmaker or do any of that. I was I hadn't declared major. I was just kind of floating. I didn't even have a graduation plan. And I think a combination of Marissa actually being more logical and sitting me down and being like, okay, I think we need to like not keep spending money on school. Maybe we should have some kind of plan. But also, I just got a different esteem for myself too. And we've done a lot. I mean, we've traveled, we've been to 20 something countries in the last, since we've been married. After I graduated, Marissa was working, we left the country and traveled for almost a year and came back broke and luckily found jobs and started our lives again, our professional lives again. And once again, I think it's tied to what Marissa was saying a moment ago, because it's not that those relationships inhibit you, but it's a kind of constructs that you build for yourself, like what you think a relationship should look like, that inhibits you. If you think that what marriage is just this kind of domesticated life where you just are, you play these roles and you carry them out until you die, that's one thing, and maybe that's what you want, and that's fine. But that's not what it has to be, and that's not the only thing it is.
Right. And if it's not making you happy, it can change.
Yeah, you can change it, and you can say, you know what, like, we want to travel. Like, we've decided very consciously over the years that we wanted to be kind of nomadic. We haven't really put down roots many places. We've kind of traveled and seen things and done different things, and luckily we're on the same page with that. But I think you can find people who are willing to craft that narrative with you to help you build that story, and it doesn't have to be the one that's the most popular one out there about what it means to be married and what it means to be in a relationship.
So a minute ago, you were talking about how you said something along the lines of, if you were giving somebody, a single person, advice, you'd tell them to be patient and tell them to wait for somebody who understands you and kind of pushes you to be a better person or makes you want to be that better person. What is it about Marissa that makes you feel like want to be a better person? What is it about her that pushes you to that next level? I mean, you just touched on a little bit of it just now, but
no, I can answer that. I've thought a lot about that. I would say the very first thing that really made a big influence on me was her lack of judgment. I'm very tough on myself, and I'm tough on myself in the worst way, the kind of way that only people who are really close to you know that you're being tough on yourself. And so most people don't know, and people don't even know to ever like step in and intercede to help you, because they think that you're like have it all figured out. And when I met Marissa and we started talking, I started to be honest with her for the first time, because I don't think I was ever really honest until we got into a relationship. I always told people about 80% to 90% of the truth. You know, like, I never was really honest with somebody. For the most part, it's kind of approximated honesty. And then I was honest with her, and I felt this total lack of judgment. And I realized that in that moment I had somebody that saw me for who I was and who I was aspiring to be and was okay with my failings. And I think that helped me embrace and get rid of, embrace my mistakes and get rid of this toxic perfectionism that I had. And it's not that I'm still not hard on myself sometimes or that I don't want to grow or whatever, but I think being with somebody who I don't feel that kind of judgment from and I feel support from has constantly made me feel okay to experiment and take risks and to be okay with not being perfect and, as an extension, be honest. And having that venue to be honest is something that I don't take for granted at all. I think also she's a good artist. And so when we work on things together, she makes whatever we do better. She has a good eye and she is more critical than I am sometimes. And so she takes what I'm excited about. And sometimes I get kind of overzealous because I'm so excited about something that I lose my critical touch. And then she'll look at it and say, you know, maybe if we did this or did that, it'll be better. And so she's made that better. I think originally when I first met her, I was trying to be academic-y and I was trying to get into school. But I was still, for the most part, trying to will myself towards some kind of sophistication. And was still, like, really out of my league. And I remember having conversations with her and her language ability at the time was like far surpassed mine. And I always felt really intimidated being in conversations with her. And so I stepped up my game and I feel like she made me more articulate. I feel like she made me a better thinker. And those are just a few examples. I mean, those are my honest responses. So I think there's a lot more of those came from, but I think, one other thing too is that I think this is really to her credit too, is that she has a really good percentage of being unimpressed and then also being supportive. Cause I've been in a lot of relationships before where people, were like impressed with my talents or whatever it was that I was doing. And then I would have a hard time having mutual respect for them because I felt like, I had this kind of inflated ego, I think. And I met her and she was unimpressed in all the right ways, right? And so it made me. No, it doesn't sound bad. It's like in the most positive way possible that, like,
she wasn't like a raving fan of your work, but she saw it.
She was honest.
Yeah,
she was honest. Is what I'm trying to say is that she was. And when I say unimpressed, I mean not that she was.
I think what he's trying to say.
Okay.
Is. I think what he's trying to say is that sometimes, is that within relationships, There's a power dynamic.
Yeah, there you go.
If I'm wrong.
No, that's good. Yeah.
There is a power dynamic. And almost everyone has probably been in a relationship where that power dynamic was not equal for whatever reason. You know, either you just adored the other person and they held all of the emotional capital in your relationship, and you know, and that's, I've been in both situations where I've been on the high end and in the low end in relationships before, and neither one is positive. Both of them are horrible. because obviously when you're in the lower position, I guess everyone can kind of intuit why that's no good. But when you're in the higher position, it's easy to take the other person for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't feel like, what am I trying to say?
You don't feel like equals in the relationship.
If the other person doesn't challenge you, then you're not just staying at the same level. If you're not growing,
right,
you're whatever the opposite of growing, shrinking.
Right.
A bad analogy.
Rock star. That's why rock stars have one night stands with groupies and they don't get in long-term relationships with them, because Or maybe they do. I don't know.
No, it's true. I mean,
you look at it, nobody wants to date a fan. Nobody wants to date somebody who everything they do is perfect and wonderful, yeah. And they adopt all of your opinions,
exactly.
And they don't
have a leg
to stand on their own.
It's dull.
Yeah. Exactly. I think between the three of us...
We covered that.
We got it. I mean, I still don't think unimpressed is the worst way to put it, but between the three of us, I think that we got much closer to what I was trying to say. But yeah, that's the idea that, like, that... relationships need to be reciprocal, and part of reciprocity is having the respect in the first place to maintain it.
So suddenly you found this girl who respected you.
Yes. But respected me
in the right
for
way.
How I am.
Yeah.
And not for any kind of, for no, you know, like I said, that first experience of being extremely honest, and I thought it, this whole time, my whole life, honestly, that if I'd ever been completely honest with somebody, that they'd lose respect because I am vulnerable and I'm not like what I sometimes project. And then I was completely honest and no respect was lost. And I just was able to take off.
That's awesome. I think that's a very common fear that if you're completely honest, you'll be rejected. So, well, yeah.
And,
go ahead.
And I feel like, wait, what was I going to say about that? I feel like a lot of issues that you have are exacerbated by holding on to judgment from the receiving from the other side. From the other side. So it's not so for myself in this specific scenario, it wasn't like I was just helping him. I gain a lot from letting go of my judgments and just being accepting. And it's not just one way. It's a reciprocal process.
Right.
So just, yeah.
Cool. So to turn the tables, kind of wrap things up, do you want to kind of answer the same question? What was it about Torben that kind of won you over, or what is it about him that makes you want to be a better person?
I feel like a lot of pressure to give the right answer right now. I feel like, similarly to Torben, I wasn't really, and I didn't even realize it when I was a single person, how dishonest I was in my relationships. I just always held back. I told people what they wanted to hear or what I thought they wanted to hear. And I just was never fully myself around with other people. And something that was unnerving, but that I've personally really benefited from, and I think our relationship has really benefited from, is that he demands communication, and he demands like the full story, and he kind of calls me out if I, especially in the beginning when I was just in my habits of always being in control of how much I gave, and he didn't allow me to do that. You know, he was just. He just called me out basically about that. Like that just didn't work for him. And so, I feel like that forced me to, dig into myself about what it was that I was so scared of letting people know about myself or letting my significant other know about myself. And then by digging into myself, then it allowed our relationship to be that much more intimate and good. Yeah. And also he, even though he's, you know, smart and eloquent and talented and like all these positive things, I think something that, I feel like a lot of the time, like the glue of our relationship is we have fun together. Like on, you know, we just, we, Maybe I should give specific examples. It's embarrassing. But, I mean...
Don't be embarrassed. You
shouldn't. We do, like, silly games all the time, like miming games, or I don't know, that sounds really nerdy, but like we just do a lot.
They're not like my, we're not like sitting in silence in the room, like putting ourselves in boxes and pulling rope.
Just playing charades against each other.
Yeah, just charades. That's the image that I got in my head. But we do we do play a lot. We laugh a lot. We play as much as we.
Yeah, we play a lot. You know, and that maybe sounds weird because we're like almost 30-somethings. We're adults,
right?
And adults aren't really supposed.
No, I think it's healthy.
We're supposed to like read the paper and.
No, that's another mold. That,
whatever.
Another stereotype.
Put on my slippers.
Yeah.
Ran out the paper.
Yeah, but we spend a lot of our time just playing.
Who instigates it? Is it just both of you, or does it just kind of develop naturally, or does one of you kind of...
Both. But it's something, the thing that's great about, like, play in any kind of relationship is just, like, inside jokes with a friend.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Like, probably someone, like, a fly on the wall, look at you like you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Or look at you like you're just, like I don't know, just not take it very seriously. But when you have been playing with somebody and you're a friend for a long time, you have this whole experience of all these things to tie back to and to laugh about and to enjoy with each other, you know?
Yeah. That's cool. Well, I've taken up a lot of you guys' time, so we can probably call it quits right now. Thanks for spending this time with me. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot, so... It's been good.
Hopefully it was helpful.
Yeah,
it was. I'm sure it'll be helpful for everybody. I'm going to turn this off.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Love You Mentory. Hope to see you again next week. We're going to have an awesome episode. I'm really excited about it. Also, thanks to Maddie Blades and... The Organ Grinders for the intro and outro music. You can find more of their tunes at soundcloud.com/Maddie Blades and or soundcloud.com/Organ Grinders.